charge? He asked. Foot pedal, Sincho said. Activated when someone we don't know comes in for a chat, or someone we don't trust. I'm guessing that's me, Lin said, peering under the desk. There was indeed a small foot switch down there. Clever. Like I said, magic box, he said. Keeping one eye on Sincho, he started unplugging the computer. I figure everything I need is in here. You'll never get it out. I think I will, Lin assured him. I know a magician who loves cracking magic boxes. Be sure to say hello to Admiral Jensen the next time you see him. Or not. I'll be there in person soon enough. Oh, don't worry, Sincho growled. He'll be waiting. You misunderstand, Lin protested. He's going to be happy to see me. You think that, huh? I know it, Lin assured him. He pulled out the sensor in his pocket, which he turned on just before entering, and checked the analysis readout. Smiling in satisfaction, he put it back in his pocket and swapped it out for a book reader he'd bought on his way over to the Volsung office. Now I'm leaving you a little dead man device of my own, he said, placing the reader on the edge of the desk closest to Sincho. It's a neurotoxin dispenser. In 1 hour, the internal fuse oxidizes and the thing becomes harmless. Until then, move in this direction and you won't have to worry about what you're going to tell Jensen about this little incident. Under the circumstances, I suggest you have yourself a nice nap. He pulled out his Unilink, tapped the signal key, and waited the 20 seconds it took for the noise coming from the anteroom to fade back to silence. Then, keeping his gun pointed at Sincho, he backed out of the office. The 6 Volsungs who'd been playing guard were scattered around the room, none of them seriously marked, all of them still breathing. That was good, and per Lin's specific orders to his 3-man team. Jensen wouldn't take kindly to having more of his people killed, after all, especially not by Lin himself. A moment later, he and the team were back on the street. 55 minutes later, without further incident or any indications of pursuit, they were back aboard Pacemaker. Captain Katura wasn't impressed. You realize they're going to have at least 3 layers of encryption on this thing, he pointed out as Lin set up the Volsung computer in Pacemaker's wardroom. Plus passwords, biometrics, and possibly a rolling code. There's no rolling code, Lin said. Those need to run a periodic sync signal, and I checked for that before I left the office. As for passwords and biometrics, they can be hacked, altered, or worked around. There's still the multiple encryptions. There's a lady aboard named Hester Fife, Lin said. You may not have seen much of her. She tends to be something of a recluse. But she's a genius with such things. I'll turn her loose on the computer while we wait for Sincho or one of his comrades to go tearing off to warn Jensen that I'm on his tail. And when he does, Shrike or Banshee will track him? Exactly, Lin said. Naturally, Sincho will see that he's being followed and either take a completely roundabout route or else just head off in the opposite direction. But that's all right, because both captains have been instructed to break off pursuit after 2 days and return here. All right, Katura said slowly. But if you're not expecting Sincho to lead you to Jensen, and you're not even going to stick with him long enough to know for sure, I'm buying time, Lin tapped the computer. Time for Hester to crack this thing. If we don't follow Sincho, he'll go straight to Jensen and give him his account of what just happened. I'd rather my version be the one Jensen hears first. So we make him either evade or try to lure our ship away, Katura said, nodding. And even when it breaks off, he won't be absolutely sure he hasn't just been handed off to someone else. Exactly, Lin said. Especially since he'll also wonder if we have some exotic Solarian tech that will let us follow him without being seen. I figure 4 days for Hester to get in, and we'll be ready to go. I hope you're right, sir, Katura said, still clearly not convinced. I am, Lin shrugged. And if it doesn't work, we'll just come back and go with Sincho's suggested approach. Which was? I believe it started off with a bullet to the knee. Chapter 18. Recently, Winterfall had noticed, it didn't seem to take much to set Breakwater off. Today, unfortunately, was no exception. Especially since the announcement from the palace was probably not what he'd expected. Harwich, Breakwater snarled, pacing back and forth across his office like a Kodiak Max on stimulants. Of all people, the entire House of Lords to choose from, and she pushes Harwich to be PM.
He seems a reasonable choice to me, Winterfall said cautiously. Probably not what Breakwater had expected. Definitely not what he'd wanted. He did vote with us in the last three MPAS funding debates.
Breakwater's eyes might have flashed at Winterfall's use of the word us. That's not the point, the Chancellor growled. Of course he voted with us. He votes for everything that builds Manticore's industrial base. The point is that he is stolid, unimaginative, and completely unequipped to maintain the political balance that's a big part of the Prime Minister's job.
And how in the world did he manage to put together a majority?
Maybe political balance isn't what the Queen is looking for, Winterfall suggested. And maybe he has a majority because she made it clear she favored him.
This time, Breakwater's eyes definitely flashed.
Of course that's what happened, he said.
Elizabeth is making her move. This is her first salvo in an all-out attack on us. And there it was. The landing pad where Breakwater's strange flights of fancy always seemed to end up these days. The Chancellor was convinced that the Queen was out to get him. Him personally. And no amount of evidence or logic to the contrary seemed to matter.
You could fight it, Winterfall pointed out. If you call in enough favors, you might be able to pull back enough of his majority to push him out again.
I'm tempted, Breakwater rumbled. Don't think I'm not. But better to save our ammunition for later, he snorted. In fact, that may be exactly what she's hoping we'll do. Flush out all our supporters so that she knows who to target before she starts trotting out her pet projects for Harwich to push through.
Or maybe she has something else in mind, Winterfall suggested. Maybe she's not so much moving Harwich into the PM position as she is moving him out of the Minister of Industry slot.
If she thinks, Breakwater broke off, his forehead furrowing. That's a very interesting thought, Gavin, he said in a more subdued tone. Very interesting. Who do you think she might want to put in his place?
Depends on her ultimate goal, I suppose, Winterfall said. At least he distracted Breakwater from his paranoid rant. If she's focused on building the Merchant Marine, she might put Countess Acton in. I know she's been working with Heinrich Hauptmann to develop contacts and supply sources in Silesia, Haven, and the League. Not counting places like Kaska and—
No, Breakwater interrupted, his pacing coming to an abrupt halt. Not the Merchant Marine.
I'll be damned. She's going for Edward's crazy scheme. King Edward?
He was only Crown Prince then, but that's him, Breakwater said. He had this insane idea of turning Manticore into the major shipbuilder in the region. Complete ships, all the way up to building our own impeller rings.
I thought that was extremely hard to do.
Extremely hard and extremely expensive, both in dollars and man-hours, Breakwater said. It'll suck up resources and people like a black hole.
Is there really enough demand out here for ships that we would ever turn a profit?
I seriously doubt it, Breakwater said, starting up his pacing again. Let me think.
He was going to send Casey around to all our neighbors as an example of what we could do. But Casey's impellers and fusion plant are from—
Yes, of course they are. Breakwater cut him off again. That wasn't the point. He inhaled sharply. Oh, hell. Casey. He waggled a finger at Winterfall. Look her up, right now. Is she still undergoing repairs?
Let me check, my lord. Winterfall sat down at Breakwater's desk and keyed the computer. A quick search. Yes, she is, he confirmed. The work's projected to be finished in about a month.
What's her schedule after that's done? Is anything posted?
Nothing public, Winterfall said, skimming down the page. Let me dig a little deeper.
Try the private records.
I am, my lord. Winterfall called up the special files, wincing a little. Those records were highly restricted, for cabinet ministers' eyes only, and Winterfall wasn't even supposed to see them, let alone be able to access them. Breakwater had given him the access codes months ago for another project, and had never bothered to change them, probably because he was relying less and less on his own staff for this kind of work, and more on Winterfall. Once, Winterfall would have taken that as a compliment, an indication that Breakwater was grooming him to one day take his place at the head of his group of like-minded lords. Now, he was more concerned that such confidence was merely because he was one of the few people Breakwater still felt he could trust. Which made no sense. Others of the group were just as loyal to the Chancellor and his political point of view as Winterfall, at least as far as he knew. But then, most of the lords didn't think the Queen was out to get them. Did Breakwater think everyone except Winterfall was against him, too? An entry caught his eye.
Here it is, my lord, he said. Casey is slated to leave in just under a month for an extended voyage of...
He blinked.
Of the Silesian Confederacy.
Silesia? Breakwater strode over and stopped behind him. What in the world do they want in Silesia?
I don't know, Winterfall said grimly. But it looks like you may be right about the late king's idea.
He pointed a finger at the display.
Look who scheduled aboard as a passenger.
Hauptmann, Breakwater murmured. Acton's errand boy. The perfect person to pitch Manticore's future shipbuilding capabilities.
Is that such a bad thing, my lord? Winterfall asked, looking up at Breakwater out of the corner of his eye.
He didn't want to be perceived as arguing the point.
Being able to build our own ships without having to buy those components from elsewhere would make us more secure.
You're not seeing the full picture, Gavin, Breakwater said, resting a hand heavily on Winterfall's shoulder. Let's assume Hauptmann gets 10 orders for Manticorean-made ships. Hell, let's say he gets 100. How much of our resources will be immediately dedicated to the new impeller and reactor industries?
I don't know. A fair amount, I assume.
A fair amount, Breakwater echoed irritably. I dare say an extreme amount. Resources that would necessarily be taken away from the construction of new Empire's ships and the maintenance of all the old ones.
He snorted.
That goes for the Navy's ships, too. Of all times to be tying one hand behind our backs, a period in which the Star Kingdom may be invaded again without warning is the absolute worst.
I understand, Winterfall said, keeping his voice calm and soothing. On the other hand, wouldn't having a shipbuilding facility of their own make it easier to build more Empire ships? And, moreover, to build them in whatever configuration they wanted?
Surely Breakwater could see that. Was he so focused on the near-term detriments that he couldn't even see the long-term advantages?
Good, Breakwater said. Because there's more. Suppose you were the League and you heard we were starting our own impeller facility. Would you be inclined to sell us any more impellers? Or would you figure that this market was closed and move on to greener pastures?
I assume I'd keep selling until the market went completely dry.
If they're good, upstanding business people, Breakwater said. But what if they're vindictive types, who would prefer to watch us swing in the wind while we bring our facilities up to speed? Remember, it'll be years before the first impeller ring comes off the line, and years more before we see any kind of profit.
Seems a bit counter to their best interests, Winterfall said.
Is it? Breakwater countered. A clever League manufacturer might conclude that we would fail, and when we came crawling back in a few years, he could charge double price for his product.
If he was the only manufacturer, there are several.
Most of whom are controlled by a handful of transstellar corporations, Breakwater said. Technodyne, Shadwell, Axelrod, Timmerman, maybe one or two others. If one of them cuts us off, the others might take the cue and either follow suit or else immediately raise their prices.
He snorted.
And no impellers also means no expansion of Empires or the Navy.
Yes, Winterfall murmured, his stomach nodding. Certainly a passionate argument. Only as far as he could tell, it was also a ridiculous one. The Transstellars did too much other business with Manticore and the other systems in this region to bother blacklisting the Star Kingdom. Besides, even if they lost all their impeller ring sales out here, which was never going to happen, they were raking in plenty of profit from their other divisions.
So the bottom line is that we have to stop this, Breakwater concluded. Suggestions?
Winterfall pursed his lips, gazing at the data. Assuming that Breakwater's paranoiac scenarios were genuinely on the line, if Casey headed off on schedule, there was a chance that one of them would come to pass. What if she didn't leave? Or if she did leave, what if she didn't look nearly as good as she did now to prospective buyers? They couldn't do any damage to the ship herself, of course. That would be utterly irresponsible, not to mention flat-out treasonous. But maybe a little tweaking of the personnel. Casey's under the command of Commodore Heisman, he said. A certified war hero.
Especially since that censure motion went nowhere, Breakwater growled. Yet another setback we can lay at Harwich's feet.
Yes, Winterfall continued hurriedly. The last thing he wanted to listen to was another tirade. That status makes him the kind of person foreign officials love to throw state dinners for. In fact, they'd probably arm wrestle each other for the privilege of hosting him.
I see where you're going, Breakwater said. Whereas if the Navy put a nobody in his place.
Hauptmann can still preach the wonders of Manticoran shipbuilding, Winterfall said. But he won't have nearly so prominent a pulpit.
Excellent, Gavin, Breakwater said warmly. Most excellent.
He gestured to the computer.
Proceed.
Winterfall blinked up at him. Excuse me, my lord?
Proceed, Breakwater repeated. Make it happen, he glanced at his chrono. I need to meet with Castle Rock and Chillen. Go ahead and use my office. By the time I get back, I expect the plan to be in motion.
Winterfall sighed. At least the Chancellor wasn't expecting to read about Heisman's firing on the news tonight. Yes, my lord. A minute later, he was alone, staring at the display, wondering how on earth he was going to pull this off. He hadn't been exaggerating about Heisman's heroic stature. Getting him fired would be next to impossible. So he wouldn't. He would get him promoted. Winterfall paused, a momentary doubt flickering through him. But the hesitation passed. He wasn't doing this for himself, he reminded himself firmly, or even for Breakwater. He was doing it for his Star Nation. Obviously, he couldn't go through any of Breakwater's usual associates. The Chancellor had stayed in the background during the whole censure debate, but no one had been particularly fooled. Likewise, he couldn't go to any of Breakwater's opponents, or even neutrals. Every one of them would smell a rat. But Breakwater also had some associates outside of the Lords. Winterfall had only met a couple of them, and they'd struck him at the time as being a bit on the shady side. But a couple of those had contacts within the Navy and even among certain of the Lords. The right word dropped in the right ear from someone who had no connection whatsoever with the Chancellor should do the trick. Flexing his fingers, he got to work. When Travis was 10 years old, his uncle had once taken him to a stage magic show. Part of the magician's routine had involved yanking a tablecloth out from under a quartet of dinner settings, complete with filled wine glasses, without disturbing any of it. Right now, he felt exactly like one of those wine glasses. With all due respect, my lady, he said, looking up from his tablet, this is a bad idea.
I agree, Calvingdell said sourly. But it's out of my hands. Casanestro and Locatelli think it's a terrific idea, and signed off on it before I even knew it was in the works.
Can't you go to them now, my lady? Travis persisted. Not only was Commodore Heisman the ideal man to lead the mission, but shuffling the top command tier of a ship this close to sailing is never a good idea.
Believe it or not, Lieutenant, there are a few people outside the Navy who get that, she said. I like to think the Queen and I are among them.
And the Prime Minister?
Calvingdell's nose wrinkled.
If not, he'll learn, she said. Baron Harwich is a decent enough man, if a little tunnel-visioned. Unlike some others I could name, I think he was an inspired choice for PM.
She waved a hand impatiently.
The point is that it's too late for him or Dapplelake to intervene now. A sudden rescinding of Heisman's promotion and canceling the formation of Swift Shore's task force would raise eyebrows, questions, and suspicions, none of which we can afford right now.
Travis looked back down at his tablet, silently seething. After all the time at Empire's, and then this Delphi training regimen he'd been put through, he'd been eagerly looking forward to serving under Heisman again. Only now Heisman was out, promoted to admiral, which he certainly deserved, and being prepped for command of a new Navy task force, which he also deserved. But the timing of the whole thing stunk. Delphi was running very much under the radar, at Calvingdell's insistence and the Queen's consent, but the First Lord and System Commander were, of course, in on the secret. If one of them had thought to run this by Calvingdell before they made their decision, this whole thing might have been caught in time. But they hadn't, and it was too late now. "I don't think I know this Captain Clegg," he said, looking up from the tablet. "What's she like?"
"Solid," Calvingdell said. "Competent, smart, dedicated, and ready for action. Not a particularly good people person, though. A bit thorny, I'm told."
"Terrific," Travis said under his breath.
"Exactly what we want for Casey."
"Oh, the feeling is mutual," Calvingdell assured him. "I also gather she considers Casey a step down from her previous post aboard Vanguard, which isn't helping her mood any."
"What if Admiral Eigen asked to keep her?" Travis suggested. "Maybe then we could get someone else."
"You've got it backwards," Calvingdell said. "Eigen's the one who recommended her for the post in the first place."
"You sure he's not trying to get rid of her?"
Calvingdell shook her head.
"He's on record as saying she's the best captain he's ever worked with. In fact, it's right there in his recommendation that he hates to lose her, but that Casey deserves the best, and he wants us to have it."
"Ah," Travis said. "Well, hopefully she'll warm up to us."
"She will," Calvingdell assured him. "I'll do what I can to put all this in a better light when we have our little talk later this week."
She waved a hand.
"Oh, don't look so glum. Commander Belokis is unfortunately still at the Empire's Academy, but at least you'll still have Woodburn on the bridge and Norris in engineering. Between the three of you, there should be enough command continuity to carry the rest of the ship."
"I hope so," Travis said, frowning. The note about Clegg's appointment as captain hadn't included the rest of the ship's roster.
"Odd. You said Commander Woodburn would be remaining as tactical officer."
"Actually, he's been promoted to full commander and will be taking over the executive officer position from Commander Belokis,"
Calvingdell said, a small smile playing at the corners of her lips.
"The tactical officer slot is to be filled by, let me see, oh, that's right, a Lieutenant Commander Travis Long. Did I forget to mention you've also been promoted?"
Travis felt his mouth drop open. According to the usual advancement timetable, he wasn't due for a promotion for at least a couple more T-years.
"My lady,"
he managed.
"You heard right, Commander,"
Calvingdell said, smiling openly now.
"Congratulations. You deserve it."
"I thank you, my lady."
"And with that, the good news of the day is over," Calvingdell said. "You've got less than a month before you sail, so get back to work."
Travis was halfway back to the main Delphi room when a thought occurred to him. Namely, that his new promotion would make it easier to pull rank aboard Casey if the mission required it. Was that the only reason he'd been promoted so far ahead of schedule? For a moment, the warm glow faded a little, but only a little, and only for a moment. Whatever Calvingdell's ulterior motives might have been, the fact remained that he was now a lieutenant commander. And as someone had once told him, the best of all good fortunes were the ones that benefited everyone. He would do his best to make sure that Casey and everyone aboard her benefited from his promotion to tactical officer. He only hoped that Captain Clegg would eventually feel the same way about her new position. Joshua Miller was 52 T-years old, with a face that was pleasantly craggy and a body that had once been lean and well-muscled, but had started running a bit to fat over the past few years as more of his time shifted from running his farm to sitting in the House of Commons. His clothing was neat but not expensive, as befit a man of the soil who had steadfastly refused to let his work in the city permeate his views, values, habits, or temperament. He was also about as ill at ease as anyone could possibly be, though he was trying very hard not to show it. Neither of which was really surprising. It was not every day, after all, when a lowly member of Parliament was invited to the palace for lunch with the Queen.
"I hope you enjoy what the chef has prepared," Elizabeth said as she picked up her napkin and set it in her lap.
pretending as she did so that she was paying more attention to it than she was to Miller. A forlorn hope, probably. Like the two men she'd had to lunch in the weeks before him, Miller was paying acute attention to everything she was doing, wondering, no doubt, exactly what he was doing here. Which, unfortunately, put him in good company, because Elizabeth herself really didn't know. All she knew was that his was the third of seven names on the list Burgundy had left her. His name, and only his name. There had been no detailing of qualifications, family, genetic profile, or anything else that might have put him on Burgundy's radar as a suitable consort, as the late Prime Minister had so delicately put it. The other names had been similarly plain and unadorned. Presumably, Burgundy had planned to add in those details later, either on the document itself or in a face-to-face with his queen. Unfortunately, he'd done neither, and now all Elizabeth had was a set of enigmas. She'd done her own homework, of course. She'd looked into each of the seven men, reading through their public profiles and digging as deeply into the more private data lists as she could without feeling like a voyeur. She had stacks of facts and figures, but no real feel for the men behind them. Hence these one-on-one lunches. "I'm sure it will be wonderful, Your Majesty," Miller assured her, carefully laying his own napkin across his lap. His motions, Elizabeth noted, were an exact mirror image of her own. Observant, and not taking any chances with unfamiliar protocol.
"According to my spies, you like chicken Kiev," Elizabeth continued. "The palace chef has a slightly different variant than what you're probably used to."
"I'm sure it will be wonderful, Your Majesty," Miller repeated. He hesitated, then dared a small smile. "So all your spies had to do was ask for the recipe. I'm sure my cook would have been delighted to share it."
"Next time," Elizabeth promised. And he had a sense of humor, too. "I hope this version will be satisfactory."
"I'm sure it will," Miller said. "It won't be the first variant on familiar cuisine that I've tried during my years in Parliament."
"I'm sure it won't," Elizabeth said, a little ruefully as memories came back. "I remember the first time I tried San Giorgio cuisine. It was quite a shock to my taste buds."
"You don't have to tell me," Miller said dryly. "My first stab at goo stew. I was convinced the cap had fallen off the spice jar while the chef was sprinkling it into the pot. I can't even smell it without my mouth starting to tingle." His face went suddenly rigid again. "Your Majesty," he added hurriedly. Elizabeth sighed inwardly. Once again, the all but impenetrable barrier that existed between sovereign and subject. She'd never liked it much when she was merely Princess Elizabeth. Now that she was Queen Elizabeth, there were times when she absolutely despised it. A picture flashed to mind. Her newly chosen royal consort on their wedding night, calling out her name in passion and then adding, "Your Majesty." Angrily, she shook the completely improper image away. This wasn't courtship. It was just the very beginning of a possible dating period. They were here to share a meal and learn a little about each other, and that was all. Her stomach tightened. No, this wasn't even dating. It was, fundamentally, the vetting of a farmland stud animal.
"My experience wasn't quite that bad," she said. "But there are definitely some dishes and spices I've learned to graciously decline. Fortunately, that shouldn't be a problem today."
"I'm sure it won't, Your Majesty," Miller hesitated.
"If I may ask, and please forgive the bluntness, but why exactly am I here?"
It was the obvious question, and both of Miller's predecessors had also asked it. Fortunately, having now gone through the routine twice, Elizabeth had a stock answer ready.
"Before his sudden death, Prime Minister Burgundy made up a short list of names that he labeled only for the Queen," she explained. "Your name was on that list."
Miller seemed to draw back.
"Really?"
he said, his voice odd.
"That's very strange, Your Majesty. May I ask what the list was for?"
"A good question," Elizabeth said.
"Unfortunately, I don't have an answer. That's why I invited you here today. Can you think of any reason Duke Burgundy would have wanted to bring you to my attention?"
"Not really, Your Majesty," Miller said, frowning at the table's centerpiece as if the answer might be hidden among the flower petals or the stem weavings.
At home, I'm a moderately successful farmer and rancher. Here in Landing, I'm a somewhat less esteemed MP who's known mainly for his inability to know when to keep his mouth shut. I can't see either of those items lifting me out of the mass of far more distinguished men and women.
Don't sell yourself short, Mr. Miller, Elizabeth admonished him mildly. Duke Burgundy put you on the list for a reason. We just have to figure out what set of abilities and interests he was selecting for.
Well, I wish you good luck, Your Majesty, he said. I'll also think about it, of course, and I'll certainly stand ready to help in any way I can. But right now, I'm completely at a loss.
I suppose we'll just have to work on it together,
Elizabeth tapped the call button.
In the meantime, we also have a chicken Kiev to work on. And while we eat, perhaps you'll be good enough to tell me about yourself.
The two previous lunches had been pleasant enough. So too was this one. And it definitely made for a nice change from business lunches with various lords, industrialist groups, or even close associates like Dapplelake. Still, in the end, it was a wash. Miller was a decent enough man, with a quick mind and a good sense of humor, at least what little of it he dared to let show in front of his queen. But there was no chemistry between them that Elizabeth could sense. Nothing that might make Joshua Miller suitable to stand beside her as the queen's consort. Certainly not with the memory of Carmichael still so painfully fresh in her heart and soul. But of course, the Constitution never mentioned chemistry. All it specified were the rules of the monarch's union and the children of that union. And as lunch ended and Miller went on his way, she found herself wondering distantly if she'd suddenly been transported back to the pre-diaspora Middle Ages. Chapter 19. In Lynn's line of work, it was vital to understand the people he dealt with. Unfortunately, no matter how carefully he planned or how insightful his assessments, some of those people occasionally surprised him. Sincho, it turned out, was among that group. Or at least at the edge of it. There were two ships in orbit when the pacemaker headed out, a courier ship and a mid-sized freighter. Lynn had assumed that the courier was the Volsung ship. Instead, it was the freighter that took off before Lynn was halfway to the hyperlimit. And it was going fast, burning space at probably 90% of the ship's capability. On paper, at least, the freighter appeared to be the property of the system governor. But a little digging through the records revealed that it had just been transferred to him by anonymous parties, undoubtedly the Volsungs. Apparently, Sincho had borrowed it back for the purpose of running a message to Jensen. Whether or not he had permission to commandeer it was, of course, a different question. Lynn guessed the governor and Jensen would be having words somewhere down the line. Still, the subterfuge was a waste of effort. Lynn had carefully bracketed the system with his three ships, and while Sincho's vector was clearly designed to make sure Pacemaker couldn't change course to intercept him, Shrike was already in position to follow. When Sincho finally escaped into hyperspace, he had a tail. The tail, as per Lynn's orders, had returned to Telmach 4 days later, with Captain Vaughan reporting on Sincho's efforts to lose him, or at least draw him away from the Volsung base. But again, the Merc's efforts went nowhere. By the time Shrike returned, Hester had hacked, sliced, tweaked, and frauded her way through every one of the captured computer's security barriers and reached the precious data within. And Lynn finally had the location of Jensen's secret base. Walther was only 8 light-years from Telmach, containing a single habitable planet that no one yet had seen fit to develop or even inhabit. Apparently, that was a pattern in Silesia. Someone would stake claim to a planet or system just to have their ownership on record and invest in a few hundred colonists or an orbiting frigate to make the claim viable. Later, if the owner felt like it, he might put some real time and money into developing the place. How Jensen had gotten permission to park himself and the Volsung's orbiting base here, Lynn didn't know. Best guess was that he'd done the owner some off-the-books favor, probably involving violence and firepower. Jensen's main stock in trade. The question right now was whether the Volsungs were about to trot out some of that same merchandise.
Anything new on the ship out there? Lynn asked.
Almost within decent sensor range, Keturah said. You did say you had a plan for this reunion, correct?
I have four of them, Lin assured him, depending on the scenario we end up in.
Yes, sir,
Katura said, not sounding completely convinced. Lin couldn't really blame him. Until they had more data, there were so many possibilities and variables. Still, Lin had a fair amount of experience with this sort of thing. He was pretty sure he had everything covered. Scenario 1. The Volsungs ran when they saw the Manticoran's firepower and are undamaged. Plan A? Regroup and discuss how to hit them again.
Sensor data's coming in now from Banshee, sir, Katura said. It's definitely a battle cruiser, though still no ID. Captain Ramos reports that the dorsal radiator vanes are non-functional and that the starboard sidewall is having some issues with flickering.
Thank you, Lin said, rubbing his cheek. Banshee, traveling parallel to Pacemaker and 1,000 kilometers above it, had far better sensors and analysis equipment than Lin's simple courier ship did. He couldn't verify Banshee's conclusion, but he also had no reason to doubt it. And Ramos's analysis was quite telling. A radiator problem could be internal, but adding in a flickering sidewall strongly suggested battle damage. Odds were that the battlecruiser approaching them was one of the ships Jensen had taken to Manticore. So much for Scenario 1. The question now was why Jensen had sent a damaged ship to meet Lin. To underscore what had happened there? Still no response to our hail, I assume?
No, sir, Katura said. Do you want me to send it again?
No, let's try something new, Lin decided. The standard hail was pretty generic. Time to perhaps sweeten the pot a bit. Put a comm laser on him. Let me know when it's ready. Scenario 2. The Volsungs were hit hard and retreated. Jensen or his replacement is ready to try again. Plan B? Regroup, repair, rearm, and discuss how to hit the Manticorans again.
Ready, sir.
Lin tapped the key. This is Jeremiah Lin calling for Admiral Jensen, he said into the mic. I'm bringing your second payment, ready for delivery. I assume you're our escort? He stopped, waiting for the short time delay.
Lin, you have one hell of a nerve coming here.
Jensen's voice boomed from the speaker. Ah, Admiral, Lin said calmly. I thought that was probably you. You're very quick off the blocks. We only entered the system 140 minutes ago.
Don't be so surprised. I knew you were coming, Jensen growled. While you were busy following the freighter, Sincho signaled one of my other ships in the system, which slipped away right under your nose and brought me the news that you were back. Give me one good reason I shouldn't blow you out of the sky.
I'll give you two reasons, Lin said, feeling sweat gathering under his shirt collar. He'd expected Jensen to be angry, but there was a viciousness in the mercenary's voice that went far beyond anything he'd been prepared for. One, as I said, I'm carrying your second payment for what you did at Manticore. Two, I want to talk to you about a resetting for another try at them.
What we did was mostly get our butts kicked,
Jensen shot back as the first part of the message did its turnaround.
Thanks to you and your useless data on their fleet. That little expedition cost me two of my battlecruisers, and I swear to God that I'm taking it out of your hide.
Lin waited another second, just to make sure he'd gotten the whole tirade.
I understand your anger, he said.
That brings me to point two. I want to discuss how our second approach will be different and more successful.
If you think I have any interest in working with you ever again, you're badly mistaken,
Jensen ground out. I'm hoping I can change your mind, Lin said. We first need to talk about what happened at—
Are you listening?
Jensen cut him off.
We're out. We'll take our payment, and you will take a hike. Where's our cargo?
As I said, we have it, Lin said with a sigh. All the work of setting this up, now straight down the drain. So much for Scenario 2. Scenario 3. The Volsungs were hit hard. Jensen or his replacement is unwilling to try again. Plan C. Pay them off and begin search for a new mercenary group.
I mean, which of your ships is it on? Jensen asked.
A small red flag popped up in the back of Lin's mind. He tapped the mute key.
Katura, signal Banshee to double-check all sensors, he said.
Jensen had known Lin was coming in, and he'd known where they were coming in from, which meant he'd had a pretty good idea where Pacemaker and Banshee would enter the system. I'm looking for a ship lying doggo, probably somewhere behind us.
Yes, sir,
Keturah said, keying his comm. Lin hit the mute key again. As you requested, it's in the form of equipment and tech, he told Jensen.
I know that, Jensen said impatiently. I asked which ship it was aboard.
Sir?
Keturah murmured tensely. Lin gestured him to be silent. Pacemaker is a courier ship, he said. Banshee is a freighter. See if you can figure it out.
Thank you,
Jensen said, his voice icy. Lin hit the mute button again. You were saying, Captain? He invited.
I was going to say, sir, that might not be the best thing.
Keturah broke off as a warbling alarm filled the bridge.
Missile trace, he snapped.
Lin swallowed hard as the trace appeared on the tactical. It was a missile, all right. The acceleration profile made that abundantly clear, coming as expected from somewhere aft of them. So much for Scenario 3. Though it was a very slow missile, at least by modern standards, with an acceleration coming in under 2,000 Gs, that probably gave it more range before its impellers burned out. On the flip side, the lower acceleration also gave Lin nearly 4 minutes to figure out his response. Still, a missile was a missile, and as such was a highly expensive piece of military hardware. What did Jensen hope to accomplish by throwing that kind of money at him? Especially since all Pacemaker had to do was pitch wedge and the missile would shatter against her stress bands. Unless Jensen had something else up his sleeve.
Sir?
Keturah prompted tensely.
Do we pitch wedge?
Lin stared at the trace. At this distance, it was impossible to tell which of the two Axelrod ships the missile was aimed at. Assuming Jensen still wanted his payment, and given that he just told the self-styled admiral it was aboard Banshee. Order Captain Vaughan to pitch wedge against the missile, he told Keturah.
Yes, sir. And us?
Lin pursed his lips. I think, Captain, it's time for another round of chicken. He braced himself. Strike our wedge. He turned to see Keturah's mouth drop open. For a moment, the two men stared at each other. Then Keturah closed his mouth again and nodded.
Helm, strike wedge, he ordered.
He lowered his voice.
I hope you know what you're doing, sir.
Lin nodded. So did he. He hit the comm button again. Admiral Jensen, he said.
I'm here, Jensen said. I see you've struck your wedge. Are you surrendering?
If I am, are you calling off your attack?
I don't know, Jensen said. How much groveling are you prepared to do?
No groveling, Lin said. But there is one more factor you need to consider. I told you earlier there were two reasons why you shouldn't blow me out of the sky. There are actually three.
A second and a third payment?
In a sense, Lin said. I liked your idea of infiltrating the Manticore system using ships coasting with their wedges down. I liked it so much, in fact, that I decided to use it on you. There was a short pause, longer than the simple time delay.
What are you talking about? Jensen demanded cautiously.
I'm talking about my other ship, Lin said. The one that came in quietly several days ago? The one that will shortly be coming into missile range of your base? The one that just saw my wedge go down and assumes I've been destroyed? This time, the pause was longer.
You're bluffing.
I'm bluffing, Lin scoffed. Is that the best you can come up with? That I'm bluffing?
You might as well be, Jensen shot back. You really think my base isn't fully prepared to repulse an attack? We have ships at the ready, plus station-mounted autocannon and counter-missile banks. Your missiles and ship won't even get close.
Who said I was targeting your base? Lin countered.
You do realize the Eridani Edict only applies to inhabited planets, right? You, Jensen broke off. You're not serious.
Oh, I'm very serious, Lin assured him. Granted, I don't know exactly what would happen if my ship fired a full load of missiles into the planet's surface with their wedges still active. Or for that matter, what would happen if the missiles hit after the wedges have burned out?
Damn it, there are people down there, Jensen snapped.
But there was a little less bite to his tone.
There are dependents, troops.
Not officially, Lin reminded him.
On paper, Walther is completely uninhabited. Good luck making any claims or accusations stick. As I was saying, I'm guessing we're talking torn-up crust and explosively ejected atmosphere, both of which will have a serious effect even at the distance your base is orbiting. But that's just an assumption. Shall we invoke the name of science and find out for sure? There was a long, hissing sigh.
I'm not convinced anything would reach the base, Jensen said. But point taken. I assume you have a way of calling him off?
Of course, raising my wedge again, Lynn said. So shall we end this nonsense? I still have a proposal for you, and I'd like to present it without death hanging over either of us.
Another long pause.
Fine, Jensen said.
His tone was still angry, but there was a new mix of caution and surliness added in.
Don't worry about the missile. It's an old practice missile I picked up a while back. Antique, plus no warhead. I just wanted to make a point.
That you didn't need me? Lynn suggested.
That you mess with the Volsung mercenaries at your own risk,
Jensen said darkly.
That includes your bosses.
And trust me, I never forget.
Whatever you're offering, whatever you think you can do to make me forget all this, that won't happen. Ever.
I'll keep that in mind, Lynn said, his eyes on the missile trace. It was still incoming.
So are you going to raise your wedge?
Jensen prompted.
Once the missile is gone, Lynn said.
There was another pause, and then, on the display, the missile vanished as someone on the battlecruiser sent the self-destruct code.
Thank you, Lynn said. That makes things much more civilized. Actually, this whole incident segues rather nicely to my comment earlier about planning our next attack. As you've just demonstrated, your missiles are a hodgepodge of ages, styles, and efficiencies. I'm thinking that what we need to take down Manticore is something a bit more up-to-date.
How up-to-date?
Very, Lynn assured him. Shall we discuss the details at your base?
Assuming it's still there?
Lynn gestured to Keturah, who gestured in turn to the helmsman. On the status display, Pacemaker's wedge reappeared.
Your base will be fine, Lynn assured Jensen, eyeing their relative vectors and running a quick mental calculation.
Looks like you'll arrive a few hours behind us. You might want to send word back regarding my accommodations. Nothing fancy. I'd be happy to just make myself comfortable in your office if you'd like.
We have more than enough room for you to have a place of your own.
Good, Lynn said. I also suggest you have someone assemble the files of the battle for me. I need to know exactly what happened, and if I go through them now, you won't have to sit around later with your feet up while I read.
You'll have them, Jensen paused. Just remember who it is you're dealing with.
Of course, Lynn said. Don't you forget either.
I won't,
Jensen said softly.
Have a safe journey, Mr. Lynn. I'll look forward to hearing about these missiles.
I'm sure you'll find the conversation most interesting, Lynn said. I'll see you back at your base.
He gestured, and Keturah keyed off the comm. For a long moment, Lynn stared at the tactical, watching as his ships and the Volsungs all reshuffled or refined their courses. Yes, he had no doubt that Jensen would jump at the chance to get hold of some modern missiles. No doubt that he would do whatever was necessary to gain such a prize. No doubt that he would follow any of Lin's instructions to the letter. Scenario 4. The Volsungs were hit hard. Jensen or his replacement is swearing vengeance. Plan D. Kill them all.
Chapter 20.
Jensen's people weren't thrilled at the prospect of having a houseguest, particularly not a houseguest that the majority of them seemed to blame for the faulty intel that had handed them a resounding defeat at Manticore. They were even less thrilled by Jensen's order to hand over all the records of that battle. But they were professionals, of a sort, and they knew an order when they heard it. They didn't obey willingly, but they did obey. Not that Lynn blamed them. Before he was even halfway through the battle's timeline, he could see why they didn't want him seeing it. The thing had been a disaster from square one. The idea of splitting the force into two waves was reasonable in theory, but the minute Jensen lost his first battlecruiser, he should have tightened up the formation.
A single wave would probably have meant fewer Manticoran ships destroyed, given the speed at which the two forces would shoot past each other and the subsequently short combat window. But even that was a fool's misreading of the mission's objective. As in chess, the goal was to checkmate the king. In this case, literally, not simply destroy as many pawns, knights, and bishops as possible. The frustrating part was that even after Jensen's failure to make sure a wounded enemy ship was dead, the error that had cost him a second battlecruiser, he still could have pulled it out. He had the numbers, the arsenal, and the expertise to reach Manticore orbit and call on King Edward to surrender. As for the Manticoran's final ploy, that had clearly been nothing but a bluff. Unfortunately for Jensen, by that point he was so rattled that he'd fallen for it, flat on his face. And in the process, he'd handed Manticore the victory. By the time Jensen made it back to the Volsung base and summoned Lin to his office, Lin had gone through the records twice and had a solid grasp of the mistakes that had led to the fiasco. The Volsung's mistakes he would need to downplay. There was no point in coming off as too critical, given that he needed Jensen to trust him. The Manticoran's mistakes he could likewise ignore in his upcoming analysis. But he had made careful note of them. They would be something he would discuss with whatever group ended up taking the Volsung's place. "First of all, under the circumstances, I think you and your men did a tremendous job," he told Jensen. "You had the Manticorans outnumbered and outgunned, and it was pure bad luck that forced you to retreat."
"Bad luck," Jensen ground out. "That's what you call losing two battlecruisers and a destroyer? Bad luck?"
"Call it incredibly good luck on the Manticoran's part, then," Lin amended with a shrug. Still, he could see in Jensen's face that he'd hit the right angle. The Admiral was already strongly inclined to blame his defeat on the fortunes of war. All Lin had to do was keep reinforcing that idea.
"Damn straight," Jensen said bitterly. "You don't have cruisers and destroyers taking out battlecruisers. Not without the ladies solidly in your corner."
"Absolutely," Lin agreed. "Plus a couple of bad decisions on your late captain's part. When luck could only support half the load he'd found, the rest could usually be handled by shifting blame, especially to people who couldn't shift it back. Captain Blakely should never have let himself get close enough to an enemy for the kind of sucker punch that took him out. Captain De La Rosa similarly should have confirmed all damaged enemy ships were out of the fight before moving in."
"The heat of battle," Jensen said, scowling out at the universe. "And overconfidence."
"Exactly," Lin said. "As for the two Manticoran battlecruisers you saw heading into the battle..."
"Yes, let's talk about those," Jensen interrupted. "Those damn ships weren't even listed in your supposedly up-to-date intel."
"With all due respect, Admiral, they were on the list," Lin countered mildly. "They simply weren't listed as functional warships."
"They sure the hell looked functional to me."
"I agree they were flying, but flying alone doesn't make for a warship." He gestured to his tablet. "And having reviewed your records, I'm even more of the opinion that they were paper tigers. No weapons, no defenses, probably not even full crews. Had you stood your ground, I believe it would have taken no more than a single missile to destroy each of them."
"You believe whatever you want," Jensen said stiffly. "You weren't there. You didn't see them."
"No, I didn't," Lin conceded, though he had seen them shortly afterward, of course. But there was no point in rubbing Jensen's nose in the fact that the Barkin follow-up team had had to abort because of the Volsung's failure. Time to back off. "But what's done is done. Let's focus on the future."
"Yes, let's," Jensen said. "Starting with these new missiles you mentioned," he cocked his head, "and maybe a few new ships to go with them. Big ships, like top-of-the-line battlecruisers."
Lin shook his head. He'd prepped hard for this conversation on the trip in from the confrontation, and Jensen was running exactly true to form.
"I've already told you the League's view of that," he said,
putting some regret into his voice. "They have a monopoly on the most modern warships, and fully intend to keep it that way."
"I'm sure they do," Jensen said contemptuously. "I'm also pretty sure that Axelrod doesn't give a damn what the League wants or doesn't want."
It took every bit of Lin's self-control to keep the reaction to that name off his face.
God. How could Jensen have figured it out?
Axelrod? He asked, allowing a slight frown to crease his forehead.
Axelrod of Terra, Jensen said, smiling in the mocking way people smiled when they were trotting out knowledge of someone else's deepest secrets. Your bosses, the ones who want to take over Manticore.
For a split second, Lynn thought about denying it. He'd worked so incredibly hard to keep even a hint of Axelrod's involvement out of this. But he knew that look, knew it all too well. Somehow, Jensen had discovered the truth, and nothing Lynn could say would convince him otherwise. No matter. He'd already decided that Jensen and his men had to die. Now he simply had to extend that scorched ground destruction to their entire base and records, too.
Fine, he said with a casual shrug. But even Axelrod can't make battlecruisers appear out of thin air. Besides, new missiles on your current ships should be more than enough to take out the RMN.
Really? Jensen said, eyeing Lynn closely.
All right, I'm listening. I'm talking about hell flares.
Are you now? Jensen said, his expression still hard and suspicious. But Lynn had caught the subtle widening of Jensen's eyes and the equal loosening of his lips. The man was hooked, all right. All Lynn needed to do was be careful how he reeled him in.
We are, he confirmed. AKM-634, to be exact. Maybe some 38s, too, depending on what my man was able to get his hands on.
I thought hell flares were on the Class AA list.
Everything in the 600 block is, yes, Lynn said. Again, I don't know what my buyer is bringing. But either one will let you cut through the Manticorans like they were tissue.
Wait a minute, Jensen said, frowning. Did you say your buyer already has them? As in bought and paid for.
Bought and paid for, shipped and presumably ready to install, Lynn assured him. That's the reason I came here to see you myself. It was supposed to be a surprise. He lifted his hands. Surprise?
And it's not even my birthday, Jensen said sarcastically, his eyes hard on Lynn. Why didn't you say something about this when you were threatening to destroy my base?
What, on an open comm line? Lynn countered.
Violations of League Class AA interdictions are hardly a topic for idle conversation.
All it would take is one of your men running his mouth at a bar on Telmach to put us all away forever.
He gestured to his tablet again.
Besides, I needed to look over the record of the battle and make sure you were competent enough for a second go at Manticore.
Now I am. We are honored, Jensen said, his expression still hard.
When are they supposed to get here?
For starters, they're not coming here, Lynn said. You don't have the equipment to handle the upgrades.
I've arranged what upgrades? Jensen demanded.
I've already got launchers.
Not for hell flares, you don't, Lynn said patiently. These will require modifications to your launch systems to handle the new plasma feeds, and a whole new targeting and telemetry system to interface with the new Seeker software.
Jensen was still maintaining that hard, suspicious expression, but his eyes were starting to glaze over with the look of a man who's just met his own true love.
And you're giving these to us?
I'm giving you the missiles, Lynn corrected. One never wanted to make things too easy for a Mark.
I'm afraid you're going to be on the hook for the launcher upgrades.
And how damn pricey is that going to be?
Don't worry. Your second payment should cover it, Lynn said. Unless you'd rather let your crew spend it all on beer and night ladies.
I think they'll understand the priorities involved, Jensen said with a sort of grim amusement.
And there are going to be a few other restrictions, Lynn continued. You understand that we can't just let weapons like this go wandering off without someone keeping an eye on them. Any mission you run with them will be under my watch, or the watch of one of my colleagues.
So what? We're now a wholly owned subsidiary of Axelrod.
Let's just say that you'll be our go-to for anything involving serious muscle, Lynn said.
That doesn't mean you won't be able to take on other jobs, just that we'll have first priority on your time.
Jensen murmured. And once again, Lynn saw the subtle shift of his expression. If Axelrod wanted to keep tabs on the missiles, Lynn or someone like him would always be at Jensen's side as advisor and supervisor.
And hostage.
That's assuming you don't mind going back to Manticore first and
feeding them the same dirt sandwich you had to eat, Lin added. Jensen's face darkened a moment, then his expression cleared and he actually smiled.
You have an interesting way with words, he said. Fine, you've got yourself a deal. What's first on the list?
You'll start by unloading the Banshee's cargo, Lin said. While you do that, I'll prep Pacemaker to head to Haven.
Haven?
Jensen asked, his eyes narrowing.
You're delivering illegal missiles to me at Haven?
Not at Haven, at Danik, Lin hastened to assure him. Much more quiet, out-of-the-way place. The government has a shareholder interest in the industrial consortium that's developing Danik, and releasing the missiles requires a sign-off from the consortium office in Nouveau-Paris.
So there's going to be a data trail.
With missiles, we have no choice, Lin said. Don't worry, none of it will lead back to you or me.
Or Axelrod?
Lin felt his throat tighten. Or Axelrod, he said.
And just to be clear, no one is going to release the missiles to anyone who arrives without his visit having been pre-scheduled by the office in Haven.
So we'll need to make sure we give Pacemaker time to get to Haven and then back to Danik.
I see, Jensen said.
His eyes, Lin noted, were still narrowed.
And I suppose you'll have to go ahead personally to work out all that paperwork?
Why? Are you afraid I'll cut and run? Lin lifted a hand before Jensen could answer.
Relax. Banshee and I will be with you the whole way. You're actually going to rough it in a freighter,
Jensen said, some of his tension fading. Why not? Lin dared a small smile. Even Axelrod's freighters are quite comfortable. Unless you want to clear out space for me in Odin.
I don't think that would be a good idea, Jensen said, his voice going grim. A lot of the men lost friends on Tyr and Thor and Umbriel. Some of them probably blame you and your half-assed intel for those deaths.
A shiver ran up Lin's back. That was a part of his creative bookkeeping he hadn't considered.
Murdering me in my sleep wouldn't get you those missiles. Some people don't think that far ahead.
Understood, Lin said. In that case, I'll definitely be flying aboard Banshee. Actually, he would have preferred Pacemaker even more than Banshee. But Pacemaker was faster, and could arrive at Haven with more time to get things rolling. Besides, parking a freighter as heavily armed as Banshee over Haven would be begging for official inspections and lots of official frowns, none of which he wanted.
Anyway, once Banshee is unloaded, you'll need to prep your big ships for travel, Lin continued.
You have, what, 2 battlecruisers and 6 heavy cruisers?
Plus 2 light cruisers, 7 destroyers, and 3 frigates.